This is a download from the BBC. You'll find more information at bbcworldservice.com.
Quiet, please.
Oh, there is a bit of chat going on out there.
Sound in sport is absolutely fundamental to the delivery of excellence, high performance, and acute skill.
It's been well known for many years that noise has a major effect on performance, and most people think that it's mediated by increases in arousal.
Hello, I'm Professor Craig Mahoney, Professor of Applied Sports Psychology at the University of Wolverhampton. If there is a sound associated with the sport, players will learn their skills and develop their ability to coordinate their hands and their eyes, deliver explosive effort through the way in which sound coordinates with the activity required.
I'm Dr. Sandy Wolfson, and I'm a sports psychologist. Noise causes an increase in people's arousal level so that when people do hear noise, their heart rate increases, they breathe more quickly, they sweat a bit more, and all these kind of things have an effect on, ultimately, on performance.
So a crowd cheering, for example, you would think would boost the performance of a footballer or an athlete?
I think the noise that the crowd makes can have a big effect on performance. I think there are other things too. But interestingly, most fans believe that their support is going to have a positive effect on the team's performance. But some research shows that even though people think they're doing better with noise, they don't actually do better. They just think that the noise is having a positive effect on them.
Corner to Newcastle inside the first minute to be taken by right winger White. He swings and curls that ball. Got hit in there. It's a goal! It's a beautiful goal there by Milburn. White swung that one in there, and Milburn leapt across away from everybody, nodded it right up under the bar, and Newcastle have scored.
Memory I'll never forget is we won promotion here, and I scored a goal in a vital game, which led more or less towards promotion. And I ran back from scoring the goal to the centre line, and I have never heard noise like it in my life. You know, every step you took running back, it was jamming your eardrum, the noise. Just woo, woo, woo. Absolutely unforgettable. It's difficult to describe. You've just got to give them something to cheer you. And then the match is won, really, because they're worth two goals.
And for all your studying, Dr. Sandy Wolfson, you're a big Newcastle United fan. You go to a lot of the games. Do you cheer?
Yeah, I do. I go to the home and to the away games, and I cheer. I'm not a fan who would boo, though. I would never boo my own team.
That's interesting, because do you think booing has a negative effect on performance?
Yes, I do. I don't think it does inspire the team to do well. I think it makes them distracted and self-conscious and ultimately will have a negative effect on them, so I think it's counterproductive to boo your own team.
You'll hear the boos behind my voice here, because Graham Poole is just leaving the pitch. He wasn't popular with the Chelsea players at the weekend. He's not popular with Everton here. He's straight red card for James McFadden.
I think the noise that comes from a crowd can have a major effect on the referee. It's not just the players who are affected, but the referees are affected. And that can also contribute to the home advantage. If you're a referee and you suddenly hear 40,000 people shout handball, then it might not be a question of you're being intimidated by the crowd. It might be that that information can help you to make a decision on what's been happening. Actually, there was a very interesting analysis of football games in the German Premier League, and it was found that the home advantage was particularly high in stadiums that didn't have a running track that separated the pitch from the fans. There was another study done in England that looked at the home advantage, and they showed people, both normal fans and referees, videos of incidents that had happened in games and asked them to make a ruling about whether a foul had been committed or not. And when these incidents were played with the sound on, they found a very strong home advantage bias. But when the sound was turned off, they found that the bias was eliminated.
But in the referee's opinion, it warranted a straight red card.
I'm Dr. Sandy Wilson, and you're listening to Quiet Please on the BBC World Service.
Well, I've come to Worcestershire, here in the heart of England, to meet the one and only Mr. Duncan Fernley.
He's a man synonymous with cricket because he's been making cricket bats for over 50 years for some of the world's top players like Sir Viv Richards, Alan Border and Ian Botham. And it seems that the sound that the bats make is crucial both when they're being made and when they're being used.
The blade just go very slowly backwards and forwards.
This is the critical part of bat making.
And while you're pressing it, you are constantly tapping it, aren't
you? Yes. The sound with the mallet on willow is the starter. Once you've got that sound right, then you can put a handle in it, and I call it a cricket bat once the handle's married into the blade. And then you take over with the grade A ball, which will be used. And that's important to me. I always have it in my drawer, because if anybody says, oh, what do you think about that one, Duncan? And just tap it, and you say, well, tap that yourself, and boing, boing, you know. Good illustrations here of bats that have been... That was used by Chris Broad when he got all his runs in Australia, when he was the player of the series in the 80s. You can see how that's been battered. I will just prove to you now that you can make a cricket bat and not what we call case harden it. You couldn't hit a ball across this room with it. And this is where your sounds come in. You've got that dull thud. Yeah. Now, it's the softest putty, look. I haven't hit that hard, but you can see every indentation.
Yeah, you're putting massive dents in
there. Without even hitting it hard.
So that's a bit of willow that's...
Natural
willow's just been taken from the
tree.
Now,
you could play cricket with it like that. The ball would hit it, and it would just go plonk. The example of this bat...
Now, this is Chris Broad's.
This is Chris Broad.
A test match bat.
Yeah.
No
oh,
less.
Well, you can see how... It is a tool. It's not a piece of furniture.
It's seen
gone
some
through
action.
A tour. Yeah. You now just listen to the two different sounds. Now, the elasticity on that is absolutely tremendous. Now listen. This one's quite a famous bat. Got woodworm in it now.
But, it's tucked away in the corner, well, covered in dust. Whose is this?
Graham Pollock. The great Graham Pollock. Got the bat here also that you'd be interested in, that Dennis Lilly played in a test match with. He was using my bats at the time, and he put some money into a company. And I don't. Well, you'd be very young when it happened. The aluminium bat. This is the actual bat. Now listen at this. There's a mallet there. Yeah.
There you go.
You won't believe it, will you? He tried to introduce this into cricket because he said you could make it to exactly the same weight and everything all the time. Well, you couldn't hit a ball from here to there. Look.
It sounds like a noise from a builder's side, doesn't it?
It does. I mean, with a ball, it's just like a plank.
If we lined them all up, we could have a cricket bat concerto.
Yeah.
You probably don't approve, but we ought to have Dennis Lilly's aluminium renegade.
Good example to people. We'll start with the raw piece of wood there.
Right, the raw piece of willow.
Yeah.
In the cricket bat concerto, played by Duncan Fernley, no less.
That's right. So we've got unpressed, natural, soft. Couldn't play cricket with it. Turn around, pressed, case hardened. Elasticity, spring. Then in line, bats that have been presented back to me after use. Alan Border, captain of Australia, season 93. Beautiful bat. Graham Pollock in South Africa, over 2,000 runs with this bat. Very soft, lovely. A great deal of elasticity. Hear the difference in sound.
You can, that's much deeper, isn't it?
Yes.
It's been riddled with woodworm.
All the woodworms coming out. Look. Beautiful. Brian Davison, big hitter of the ball. Face completely cracked up now after a season. Completely hollow now.
You could still score a few runs with
that.
Yeah,
you could. You could taped up. That's what they do, like Chris Broad did. You can tape them up, yeah. Now, this was the bat that was taken out into the middle to Dennis Lilly in the 70s when he tried to introduce the aluminium bat, And this is the sound that came from this. And I think you'll agree that you wouldn't even be able to hit a ball off the square with it.
That's horrible.
That's terrible.
It would, it would change the whole feel of cricket,
yes,
wouldn't it?
Yes, it would. And fortunately, the MCC said no more, and they brought it into the rules of the game that bats had got to be made out of wood.
Dennis Lilly in. Bowls to Botham, who gets a lifter. And this is going to be a six down to the score box end near the Warwick Road station, and that was an incredible shot.
Hello, I'm Clive Everton, BBC TV's longest-serving snooker commentator, and you're listening to Quiet Please on BBC's World Service. When you get an imperfect ball-to-ball contact, you can tell by the sound whether it's a kick. An ordinary contact is a nice click, whereas a kick sounds like two rocks being hit together. The difference in the sound will depend on the speed which the ball is hit, whether it's a full ball or a half ball or a quarter ball or a very thin contact. That comes across from the sound. I remember when Cliff Thorburn made his maximum at the Crucible, which was the first that had ever been made in the World Championship. This was 1983. He told me what a wonderful sound the green made as it hit the back of the pocket. So what you've got is a satisfying sound as the cue hits the cue ball, another one as the cue ball hits the object ball, and a most satisfying thwack as the object ball goes into the back of the pocket, which of course is leather-backed.
That provides very favourable feedback to the performer. You know when you've done the shot correctly because of the sound, so it can be very positive in nature.
I was going to ask you about the haka. Is that an important sound in sport?
Oh, yes. The cultural integrity of a dance which is very much based in the Maori tradition brings with it both the fear of the combat that's about to arrive as well as the noise of the activity, which is, because it's in a language which performers normally don't understand, is both threatening, it's aggressive, as it's deliberately meant to be, and it's therefore preparing for battle. I'm Professor Craig Mahoney. You're listening to Quiet Please on the BBC World Service.
We went out there and over half the stadium was already full. And we got boos from the Czech fans and like amazing cheers from the American fans.
I'm Sean Wheelock in the United States. I'm speaking with U.S. international defender Jimmy Conrad about the importance of different sounds in his sport, football.
Once I actually got to play and you get out there, man, yeah, I'm not thinking about anything. I think the only time you pick up on the sound from the crowd is when a goal is scored. The only other time you notice the sound is when I can't hear somebody who's standing 5 yards. It's so loud. When we played against Italy, I think in Gelsenkirchen, it was so loud, and Oguchi Onyewu was 3 yards from me. He's yelling at me to either step up or close or just to do something that he thought I needed to do. I couldn't hear him.
What about hearing the voices or even just noises coming from the opposing footballers?
Yeah, well, I couldn't understand what they're saying, but, you know, I think what's universal about language is that you can pick up on tone, you know, the harshness in what they're saying or how loud they're saying things. So you could hear when they were kind of talking to each other, they were frustrated, and that, you know, as the opposing team, you get a lot of confidence from that. What's interesting was just now looking back on these times, how much the sound plays into my memory.
Sledging is a phenomenon mainly only seen in cricket in an overt way, though it happens in all sports, in the change room beforehand and so on, but cricket have taken it to a new level.
Oh, there is a bit of chat going on out there. Flintoff's got plenty to say, and it's continuing. Clark is walking up the pitch, and these two are having a go at each other. Flintoff smiling as he walked back. The umpires haven't got involved. Flintoff, of course, looked very, very dismissive of the whole thing, and now Shane Warne's going down. He's having a chat with Clark.
Warney said, don't get involved in this sledging, Clark. No, don't get involved in that.
You try and gain advantage over your opponent by whatever way you can, and if that's in the form of sledging, by trying to undermine their confidence or limit their belief in themselves or give them a concern about how well you're playing, then obviously you do that. Shane Warne is a very quick-witted individual, and that's very useful if you want to use sledging, because you've got to be able to produce a phrase that you may have rehearsed but put it into a new context quite quickly. And it's those people who can be very funny often who are very good at sledging, because they can pull out a cutting comment and really undermine that person's potential very vociferously.
So sledging is a sound in sport that can have an impact on the outcome.
Absolutely right. Yep, no doubt at all. Young players are often taught to make a grunt at the point at which they are likely to make contact with the ball. If you were a karate performer trying to hit an opponent, to make a sound at the point of contact, whoosh, is a common activity in karate. But what we see happening more commonly now is that in some sports, and tennis is the most obvious example of those, some players are being encouraged to maintain that release of sound because it is doing two things. It's helping them coordinate their stroke. It is also potentially putting off the opponent.
And now David Krimble is calling Monica Seles to him, and I'm sure he's going to talk to her about the grunting.
My word. Never seen this before.
When I'm doing it, I'm not realizing I'm doing it. I'm not doing it on purpose to hurt anybody, but I don't think I'm going to win a match because I'm grunting. I mean, that has to be clear.
I have heard players say that noises from their opponent can be very distracting.
How can a player kind of block that out?
It's very difficult to block it out, but the fact that it's fairly predictable should ease the problem. You know, if you know that you're going to get the grunt every time the person serves or hits the ball, then that predictability can allow you to adapt to the noise and it shouldn't be quite so distracting.
Lendl serves to the backhand, got back cross court. Lendl forehand half volley again. Although it's in, Connors gets it and returns just over the... Was it? It was in.
30,
I don't know what Lendl was questioning.
I think Lendl thought the linesman called out, but...
That was Connors groaning again. Does sound like out. Yes, there you are. He did think it was out. He heard Connors grunt and thought it was out, just as I've been thinking it before. That's what he's questioning. He's come to the net. He's taking a good rest on the net. He's smiling. Connors is also resting on the net. They're having a good old chin wag. Connors puts his racket on his head. I'm sure that's what's happened. It's Connors' grunt. People think it's a call of out from somewhere, or fault. And it's a grunt when he's receiving. How extraordinary.
Dr. Sandy Wolfson, you're a sports psychologist. Why are some sports quiet and some sports noisy?
That's a very interesting question, and it's difficult to find any rhyme or reason to this. Certainly some of the sports that require a lot of concentration, sports like snooker and darts and golf, traditionally expect the audience to stay quiet. And these are usually sports that are independent in nature, where you may have an opponent, but that opponent isn't kind of actively interacting with you as you play. When you get to games that are totally interactive, like football, basketball, rugby, then the tradition is for the fans and the supporters to be part of the action.
In games like snooker or golf, the merest cough or movement in the gallery or crowd can put the player off, can cost him the tournament.
That's right, and it would be interesting to see what would happen if you did allow the crowd to go wild and see if that would have a big effect. It's not easy to see a pattern in all this because in tennis, for example, you don't expect the crowd to make a lot of noise, and that's seen very negatively. But in something like boxing, the crowd can go wild. So in both those cases, you've got sports where there's two people interacting, and yet there's a very different tradition behind the way the audience should behave.
We're here at the Meadowlands Arena where the New Jersey Nets are hosting the Utah Jazz. And without question of the four major sports in America, the National Basketball Association, the crowd, the PA announcers, the music has to be the loudest. The fans really enjoy it. They get into it. The public address announcer is screaming into the mic, getting the fans up. Gary Sussman, the longtime PA announcer, the voice of the New Jersey Nets. In your estimation, in your mind, does your enthusiasm, does that really have an effect on the players, you think, getting jacked up?
When you look at all the American sports, whether it be basketball, baseball, football, hockey, probably basketball, the crowd, the music has the most effect because the players are closest to the fans, and it just seems that they just get that extra little pace, that extra speed, just that extra motivation from the crowd noise, and that's why home court advantage is so big in basketball.
Have you picked up like a signature call?
The call that I get remembered the most for is one of the more recent ones, which is a VC3 when Vince hits a three-pointer. That seems to have caught on.
That's a VC3!
I'm of the opinion that while we have an etiquette in some sports that says silence should predominate, I think it would be far more colourful for the sport if we did in fact allow a little bit more cheering and hysteria in the background with people clapping and shouting during a snooker match or during a squash match or during some other performance which was expected to be quiet. Football matches are quite exciting because of the amount of noise which goes on in the background. You could argue that a snooker match is very boring because until somebody does something which is a bit unusual, there is total silence.
Do you think that has something to do with the psychology, though, of the people that are actually watching?
It's very true. I think there are cultural differences here, and I think that perhaps the British reserve and the historical awareness of most sports being developed in Great Britain is different. And so, you know, Britain, which is the home of most sports, brought up in a time when many of these sports were played by the gentry and not available to the general public. Those available to the general public were, of course, eye gouging and street fighting, where the preserve of sports like tennis and rugby and so on were for those of a much more favoured background. Where in some of the newer countries like Australia and America, we see people from all different socioeconomic backgrounds able to take advantage of playing any sport they want to. And therefore we have a different approach to the way they will encourage their favoured team or their favoured performer, which is more vocal and more audible.
Sports certainly do come with their own sounds, though, don't they? I'm thinking that cricket has that summery sound to it of people having a chat and maybe a warm beer and listening to the sound of leather on willow, whereas NBA basketball comes with all kinds of noise and raucous activity.
It does, and you're quite right to identify that different sports have different noise expectations.